Good morning, everybody. Hey, so as we were singing that last song, just there are a few parts or a few phrases in that song that really, really stand out to me. And it kind of as we go back into the chorus, what a powerful name it is. And it says that you have no rival and you have no equal. What I love about the church is that, and I think it's been kind of this misunderstanding about what church is. I think for a long, long time, people thought that church was for church people, right? Like people who look right, act right, dress right, talk right, like got all their things together. And that's kind of what we thought church was for. But Jesus said, I came for those who are sick. I came for those who are broken and messed up. In like his mission statement, Luke chapter 4, he's like, I came for those who are brokenhearted and in prison and in captive. And that's what I came for. That's who I came for. So what I love about the fact that we get to come and do every Sunday is, man, it doesn't really matter where you're at. It doesn't matter what you're struggling with. It doesn't matter what you're going through. There's this name that we get to lift up that's above every name. There's power in the name of Jesus. So whatever's going on in your life, that's what we get to do. That's why we celebrate at church, is because we get to come in and we get to cast all of our cares on him, knowing that he cares for us. So if you're sick this morning, if you're struggling this morning, you're in the right place, right? Good. So we're continuing a series this week called Letters from a Fisher. The premise is really simple. Peter was a fisher, and he wrote some letters, right? Pretty simple. And so kind of what we've wanted to do, or what we're doing over the past few weeks and the next few weeks, is looking at the books of 1st and 2nd Peter and some of the things that we can learn from them, some of the themes that we can find, identify, and hopefully apply it to our lives. And I'm going to be honest, we're not even going to make it to 2nd Peter. Like, there's so much going on in 1st Peter that we're going to camp out there for the next 2 weeks, right? So, like I said, there are some themes that are very prevalent. But before we got into that, last week or the first week, we talked about how there is life after failure. And Peter, what an example of that, right? So Peter's the guy who we always like to bring up all of his inadequacies, his deficiencies, all of his goofs, his mistakes, his mess-ups, his screw-ups. We're really quick to point out all that Peter did with respect to failing, but sometimes we fail to mention that Peter had a life after his failure. And so he wrote these letters after he cut off a soldier's ear, after he fell in the water when he got out of the boat to follow Jesus, after he denied Jesus. And I love that whole story about him denying Jesus, you know, before the rooster crowed. And then it's just an amazing thing when you think about failure, right? Because when the rooster crows every single morning, I'm sure Peter was reminded of his failure. And you may be too. Like maybe when you wake up, you know, somebody says something or you have these thoughts or you go to a place where it just reminds you of your failure. And what's amazing is that you can live life after that failure, right? So this week, what we're doing is we're continuing with our themes, which all happen to start with the letter H. It works out like that, right? So last week we talked about humility. And this week we're going to talk about honor. And not everybody get excited all at once. That's good. Honor, it's kind of like humility. When somebody tells us that we should focus on humility or we should be more humble, we're just like, it doesn't get you excited. It's not something you can kind of create like these cheerleader chants about, right? H-U-M-B-L-E, right? Doesn't really work. Just doesn't happen. And honor is kind of the same way. We don't celebrate honor in our culture, right? We celebrate dishonor. And we smear it all over the front pages of tabloids and magazines and newspapers, right? We celebrate it when people punch other people in the face, and we make videos about it and put it on Facebook. We celebrate dishonor, but we don't celebrate honor, right? It's not something that's valued or trendy in our culture. So I don't know why it is, but do you guys kind of look back at your childhood and wonder why you were drawn to some of the things that you're drawn to? So this was my career projection when I was a child, right? These are the things that I wanted to do. The first thing that I can ever recall wanting to be professionally was a boxer. Don't know why. I played Mike Tyson's Punch-Out when I was a kid, and I think that may have had something to do with that, right? And then the next thing, and this is legit, I'm not making this up, I wanted to be a ninja. I don't know if that pays well or not. I don't know if you go to school of ninjas where you get your education, but I wanted to be a ninja. And one of the things that always fascinated me about ninjas and warriors and samurais, right? You read these books and you watch these movies, was they always talked about kind of this mysterious code of honor that they lived by. And they used the phrase death before dishonor, right? And I didn't even know what that meant, but it sounded like something that I wanted to be a part of, right? It's just like, it seems like it's just this person who's got such character and resolve that they would do anything and they would stand up for anybody and they would fight to the death for a cause that they believed in. And I was like, yeah, that sounds good. I want to do that, right? And it's funny how, looking back, I can see now that God is the one that instituted this idea of honor. God is the one that placed this desire in our hearts to be around people who are honorable, and also to be honorable people ourselves. So as part of God's creation, one of the things that he did is, I think he put in us this understanding of honor, that even if we don't experience it in our world, we know that it's supposed to be there. We know that it's something that we should strive toward. And it's part of God's plan for creation, especially for his followers, for Christians, right? And it's sad because there's not a lot of it. Like, we can talk about the world, right? And we can talk about tabloids, and we can talk about people who aren't necessarily supposed to be honoring. But what about us? Let's start right here. Let's talk about the church, and let's talk about churches in general. You find a lot of dishonor in churches. You find a lot of people that don't like other people because of the things that they do. They don't like other people because of the color of their skin. They don't like other people because of the struggles that they have. And that's not honor, right? That's dishonor. And that's in the church, where honor should be epitomized, where honor should be the way that you put it on exhibit for the world to see. It's an exhibition of honor, and we don't do a fantastic job of that ourselves, so let's not start pointing fingers. We're really good at that as church folk. We're like, man, y'all need to do better. And the truth is, we need to do better, right? So 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 17 says this. It says, honor all people. And we could put a period on that, walk out, and we got work to do for the rest of our lives. I do. I don't know. And I'm not just talking about work. I'm talking about overtime, right? I got work to do. Honor all people. Love the brotherhood. Love this. Love your community. Fear God and honor the king. And it's kind of like you get an idea. He's addressing groups of people that we should have these relationships with, right? Honor all people. Love the brotherhood, which entails, it kind of includes honoring your community, the people that God has placed in your sphere of influence, that he has placed in your life. Fear God. Honor God, right? That's good. And we live in a society where it's like, only God can judge me. That should terrify you. And there's no honor. Because there's no honor, we think that God is like this softy who allows anything and everything to go, and that's just not the case, right? Like, God is full of grace, but he's also full of truth. Do you see what's going on there? Right, right. Grace is awesome, but there's also truth. Like, I love the mess out of my children. I do. I love them so much, but when they mess up, they get punished. There are consequences for stupidity, in my son's case, and there's constant, right? Because then there are consequences for my daughter doing whatever girls do. I don't know. Shelly usually handles that. So I'm the good dad, right? I'm the fun dad, as Daniel was talking about. But here's what's cool. The word honor in these verses, when you look up kind of the Greek definition, it means this: to estimate, to fix the value. Essentially, what you're doing when you honor somebody, let's take that first phrase, you honor all people, what you're doing is you are placing a value on them. You're fixing a value on them, right? And let's be honest, I don't know how you operate, but I still kind of operate on, I'll give you an honor based on how you honor me. I'll place a value on you based on how you place a value on me, right? And that's not how we're supposed to live our lives. So when it says to honor all people, what it's telling us is that we should place a value on them and treat them accordingly. So the question is, what's their value, right? What is the value of all people? And that's where we'll start this conversation, is by talking about the appraisal. Have you guys ever had an appraisal done? Maybe you've had some jewelry appraised. Maybe you've had your house appraised. And so if you go into the jeweler and he's got that cool, like, headband magnifying glass thing, and he gets, like, real close, and he can tell you about the C's, the cut, clarity, color, and carat. Boom, done. You guys didn't help me. It just came, right? So it's... an appraisal is what they do when they take a really, really, really in-depth look, and they pull comps. They find things that they can compare it to. And then what they do after all of this research is they give you a value of the thing that they've been studying. So one of the things that we could probably do better of is having a better appraisal process of the people that we're supposed to be honoring. And I think it's one of the times, or one of the reasons, that we have a hard time honoring all people. because we don't appraise them properly, right? We appraise them based on what they did to us or how they treat us or what they said to us or how they ignored us or what they said about somebody else that we didn't even know that they said, but we're upset because we heard that they said something that they may have said or may not have said, and we're not really sure, but we're upset. And so that's how we honor. Like I said, my default operating system is more like Windows instead of Mac. It's broken. My default operating system is one that likes to reward people who are good to me, and it likes to diss people who are rude to me, right? That's still, unfortunately, my natural fleshly state of being, but that's not what we're called to. We're called to greater than that, right? So we have a different appraisal process to live by. 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 18 and 19, it says this. And this is so good, man. Like, I think sometimes we read this stuff, and we just, like, we've heard it before, and we know it. So we just kind of gloss over it quickly, and we don't allow it to penetrate our hearts like it should. For you know that it was not with the perishable things such as silver or gold that you were redeemed from the empty way of life handed down to you from your ancestors, but with the precious blood of Christ, a lamb without blemish or defect. Right? Like, you weren't bought with gold and you weren't bought with silver. You were bought with the life of Jesus. Like, he willingly gave his life for us. And it says that that's how we know what love is. And this is the greatest example of love, that a friend would lay down his life for his friends. And so we get to see epitomized. We get to see this template of what honor is. It's somebody who serves and loves and gives to other people. And what's important about that is we see that our appraisal value or our appraisal system is usually wrong, because we kind of look at very, you know, temporal things. We look at material things. We look at successes and accolades, and that's how we determine the value that somebody has. But God works completely different than us, right? Remembering that Jesus died on the cross for every single person who has ever entered into the human equation, that should be our starting point for the appraisal process. Their value isn't based on what they can do for us, right? Their value isn't based on what they can do for you, because we've all seen this, right? We've seen how people posture and leverage relationships, and they manipulate people to get out of it what they want. I was thinking about this the other day. We've got some dogs. Do we have any dog people? All right. Do we have any cat people? Anyway, who cares? That's how dog people feel about cat people, right? So we've got some dogs. Two are awesome. One is an idiot. It's just dumb. It's Shelley's dog. She gets so mad at me when I say that. She's awesome. She's fun, but she's dumb. Like, she's just dumb. And so what she'll do, she'll get on the bed, and she's supposed to be a small dog, but I'm like, when did you buy a Shetland pony? This thing is so heavy and huge. And so she'll jump on the bed, and when she's like rolling over or something, she'll put her foot on your face and leverage herself, like that's how she pushes off, with her big old fat paw and sharp claws on your face. And she leverages you, right? She uses you for leverage to get where she wants to go. And how many times do we do that in relationships, right? We use other people and we leverage our position, right, on them, or we manipulate them, or we paw them in the face to get where it is that we're trying to go. That's not honor, right? That's manipulation. That's dishonor. So it's not on what they can do for us. It's not on how being kind to them will benefit us in return. Like, you've seen this, and we call them brown nosers or suck-ups or a lot of other things that we can't repeat in church, right? So you don't use people based on what it is that they can give you in return, and you're not only kind to somebody because they have something to offer, right? It's our job, it's our responsibility to be kind and caring and compassionate to all people. But we don't like that, right? We don't like the all part of it. We like it when we get something out of it in return. In fact, I don't even think it's honor until it's in that part of the equation. If they're giving you something in return, that's not honor, that's compensation. Right? It's honor when you love somebody, you care about somebody, or you serve somebody, and they can give you nothing in return. That's when it has stepped over into the realm of what honor truly is, right? So that's where we begin the appraisal process. It's that Jesus died for every single person on the face of the earth. And I want to be honest with you, this is so hard for me, because you've got people who wrong you,
right?
And you've got people who say things about you, and you've got people who, for whatever reason, they don't like you, and it's not jiving, and it's not gelling. And then let me kind of give you a caveat here, right? I think there is a kind of a clause in this. Just because you're honoring towards people doesn't mean you have to involve them in your life. So if somebody is manipulating you or they're using you, you can say, don't let the door hit you where the good Lord splits you, right? May the Lord bless you as you leave. And you can honor somebody on their way out, right? You don't have to allow them to have influence into your life, but you can still pray for them and care for them and hope that God's best happens in their life, whether it does or not, depending on their stupidity. But that's just another story, right? So their value exceeds silver or gold or any material thing. So what it does is it eliminates our appraisal based on success or achievement, right? Because this is the world that we live in. Like the value of people, well, what's your net worth? How much money do you make? And you know what I was thinking about the other day? We do this as a culture, and I think I've even probably done this. When you try to size people up, when you're meeting people, and you're like, so, what do you do for a living? Why don't you just ask the question, so, how much money do you make? Like, isn't that kind of where we're going with it? And it's so freaking ridiculous that that's the way that we think as a society. That's not honoring, because what are we interested in? What they have, not who they are, right? That's dishonor, if we're being honest. So their honor, their value shouldn't be based on their success or their achievement or their bank account or what they have or what they can do for you. Their value isn't found in pedigree or social status. Look at that verse one more time. It says that you were purchased not with perishable things such as silver or gold that were redeemed from the empty. You were redeemed from the empty way of life handed down to you from your ancestors. And so it's funny that he kind of brings in the familial relationship. He talks about the people, your parents and your grandparents and your great-grandparents. And I think it's cool that we kind of have to understand that honor it's not dependent on who your daddy is or who your mama is or what your last name is or whether or not you've got a trust fund waiting you, right? Although that would be awesome. I don't know anything about that. I tell people all the time, somewhat jokingly, I'm like, I wish my dad was Archie Manning, you know? 6'5", 230, laser rocket arm. It's cool. So our value isn't placed in our pedigree or our parents or our social status or what you've, you know, kind of accomplished socially. We should not factor that into the appraisal process. The value of every single person can really be summed up in one word. And man, this is so cheesy, but it's so true. The value of every single person is priceless. Because think about the price that was paid. Something is only worth what somebody's willing to pay for it, right? Like, Shelly and I, we've got a house that we've tried to sell on a few different occasions, and we had a real estate agent tell us that this house is going to sell for this amount of money, right? And she was convinced that it was going to sell for this amount of money, and I was like, you go ahead. Let's see. And so she put it on the market for whatever she said she was going to put it on the market, and guess what? It didn't sell. So the house wasn't worth what she said it was worth. It's only worth what somebody is willing to pay for it. And so the question is, what was God willing to pay for you? What was God willing to pay for every person on the face of the earth? The most priceless gift, the gift of his son. It's like he plundered heaven to save us. He plundered heaven to show us what honor and love and mercy are. And so that's where we should, or that's how we should appraise people. There's not a way that we could really quantify the gift of grace that God has given us. But that's the way he views us, through that lens of his son, the sacrifice of his son. So when we are trying to determine who we should honor, right, because we're so selective in who we honor, we have to remember that that's how we appraise them, that every person is priceless to God. They are invaluable. Second point, and there's really only two points, and then we're going to talk about what we need to do with it, right? Second point is this. Means all, right? That's amazing. That is the most profound statement we have ever made here at Motion Church. All means all. Because you know how we do this stuff, right? Like we start to get theological, we become our own scholars. It's like, well, it says all, but what it really means is, no, it means all, you moron, right? And I am so guilty of stuff like this. I am the greatest lawyer in my own mind, right? I can justify and clarify and make sense of things that don't make sense and make nonsense of things that should make sense, right? That's just how we work. And so I think the second question that's worth spending some time on is answering the one that you are all asking, does all really mean all, right? Does all really mean all? And so the definition of the word all in this passage, this is what it means. This is the definition. You determine if all means all. Each, every, any, all, the whole, everyone, all things, everything. Does all mean all? Yes. The short answer is yes, right? One of my favorite quotes, kind of with respect to honor, since we're talking about honor, that kind of, it's like, it's this idea of honoring all people on poetic steroids, right? It's to honor up, honor down, and honor all the way around, right? Honor up, honor down, honor all the way around. I kind of got myself into a mess. And what an incredible idea, right? It's just this really goofy way for us to remember that honor's for everybody, right? Honor, and here's what's amazing. Like, we know this, that our honoring other people isn't based on their worth, right, necessarily. And you don't honor other people because they deserve honor. You honor other people because you're honorable, right? When you give honor to somebody who doesn't deserve honor, that means you are honorable, right? That means you are able to give honor. You are honorable. Ooh, there we go. So just to give this a little bit more context, this honor up, honor down, all, honor all the way around, it's just a clever way to help us remember that we are called by God to honor all people. And so Peter, what he does is he gives us some specific examples that fall into these categories. And the first one is honoring up. And man, we could use some of this in our world, right? Because we love authority, and we love our government, and we love our presidents, and we love our governors, and we love our senators, and we love our representatives, and we love our mayors and city council members and police officers and teachers and bosses. We love them so much as a society. Said no one ever, right? And so I think it's really cool that we get to see Peter, and this is his life after failure, right? He's telling us to honor those who are in authority in our life after he didn't honor those who were in authority. Because remember, we talked about how when they came to arrest Jesus, that was the authority. And what did he do? He responded in violence, right? He didn't honor authority. So after his failure, he tells us with some hindsight and maturity, he tells us that, hey, maybe I screwed up, right? Maybe I messed up. See, what had happened was, and maybe you guys don't need to do what I did. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 13 through 15, it says this: submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether to a king as the one in authority or to governors as sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do right. And just real quick, I want to talk about this for a second. So we understand when we read these words like submitting to government authorities or governmental authorities or human institutions, like, so we naturally put our understanding, we naturally translate our world and kind of place it over these words, right? So when we hear honor the king, like, we probably think governors and presidents and people in high positions of power, right? And here's what's amazing to me. When they wrote these letters 2,000 years ago, the government was way worse than ours. It was way more oppressive than ours, right? We're concerned about tax, right? They were concerned about their lives. It's just a lot different culture that they lived in and we lived in, and we are so dadgum dramatic, right? We are so ridiculous. So when you find some of the things that go on in the New Testament, in fact, like, it's very well documented that throughout the centuries that Christians were killed just for the sake of being Christians by the governments. Certain governments, so like in our society, I don't know anybody that's gotten their head cut off in the United States for standing up and saying that, hey, I like Jesus a lot and I love him, in fact, right? They're not cutting people's heads off for that. They're not putting you on a cross and they're not burning you at the stake. That stuff's not going on. So our government's not as bad as you think it is. And it's amazing how we as Christians just tell everybody in the world how awful and stupid and incompetent our government is, and there is zero honor when it comes to politics. And this is what's amazing, right? Because the authority doesn't mean that you have to agree with them, but you are still called to honor them. Church folk, not our church, but you know other church people, right, and what they do. I gave you an out. You're supposed to be like, yeah, that's right. And here's another really cool thought that's found in verse 14. He's like, hey, governors are kind of sent, and what they do is they punish those who don't do right, and they reward those who do right. And it's amazing how we don't like, you know, authority, but authority is only a problem if you're not doing the right thing, right? Police officers are only a problem if you're speeding, right? And those cameras that they used to have on the traffic lights were only a problem if you were running the red lights. We still didn't like it, big brother, right? And this is what it says in verse 15. For such is the will of God, that by doing right, you may silence the ignorance of foolish men. So that's what he, honor up. Honor people who are placed in positions of authority in your life. Honor your boss, even if he's kind of a jerk, right? Honor your teachers. Honor the governor in the state of Texas who, I always forget who it is, Jim Abbott, correct? Good, all right. Honor presidential people, people who are in places of power and authority. And instead of just griping about stuff like we like to do as American Christians, we just like to gripe about stuff, why don't you pray about something? What if we prayed about things as much as we talked or thought about things? Do you think that might make a difference? So there's some honor. So here's another one. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 18, continuing on in this idea of honoring up. It says, servants, be submissive to your masters with all respect, not only to those who are good and gentle, but also to those who are unreasonable. Dang! Right? Because you know what we do? No, I'm God's child. You ain't going to talk to me like that. And we get real spiritual when somebody disrespects us, when the really spiritual thing to do would be to honor them, even if they are unreasonable. Right? We can modernize the second verse a little bit. It says, servants, be submissive to your masters. But we can modernize it to say, hey, employees, be submissive to your bosses. Hey, students, be submissive to your teachers. Hey, children, be submissive to your parents. Right? These people that are placed in authority over your life, then you need to be submissive to them. You need to honor them. You need to respect them. It doesn't mean you have to agree with them, right? And it doesn't mean that there can't be discourse. And it doesn't mean submission isn't a doormat, right? You don't just get beat down all of the time. You can still have a conversation with somebody, right? But what you need to do ultimately is you need to submit to them and honor them. And so I think it's cool when we modernize it and we all get punched in the mouth. Because I know I do. I struggle with authority sometimes. If someone is placed in a position of authority in your life, then it's your God-given responsibility to honor them and to add value value their role in your life, even if you don't agree with them. So that's honor up. The second group that Peter specifically points out, and we'll kind of lump these two together, is the group of honoring down and honoring all the way around. Good. Glad you guys are with me. So 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 16, it says this. Act as free men and do not use your freedom as a covering for evil, but use it as bond slaves of God. And so just really quick, we're going to cruise through this. I think there's kind of an idea at play here is that, hey, we should honor the people that are around us and the people who are underneath us by living lives that show that even though we're free in Christ and we are able to do certain things, that we would put their spiritual well-being and we would prefer their life and maybe the struggles that they're going through to our own freedoms. And this, let me kind of give you some, we'll put some skin on this. I can't think of a more clear picture of honor when someone gives up their preference for the sake of someone else's progress. So this is what this means, right? This means doing really silly countercultural things like encouraging people rather than tearing them down, right? Like when you actually say nice things about people or you find things to speak to, potential in their life or finding the good in them as opposed to finding the faults and flaws in them, then what you're doing is you're honoring them, right? Now it would be really easy for you to find all the things that they've got wrong. That's easy, right? Any of us can do that. But why don't you take some time? Why don't you put in some effort and find some good things that are going on in their life? How about this one? Dressing and acting modestly so that those who may be struggling with lust aren't struggling with you, right? And here's the deal. Yeah, you could dress like a hoochie, or you could dress a man hoochie, whatever you call those. I don't know. What's the word? I'm not doing that. Y'all ain't getting me caught up in that, right? And they could, Shelly and I were watching this. Have you guys seen the Google translation of songs when you translate it from one language and back to another, right, back to English? Like you translate it to Croatian and you translate it back to English. So there was a little bit on Jimmy Fallon, and there was a song. It's basically, I'm in like with your cadaver. It's just weird. So, yeah, you're going to have to figure that one out on your own. Jimmy Fallon, I'm in like with your cadaver. But don't make them struggle with you. Like, you could dress however you want to dress, and you could act however you want to dress. You could be flirtatious if you want to be flirtatious, but that's manipulating and using people, right? Honor other people. Be considerate of the struggles that other people have, and don't flaunt your responsibility. Like, let me kind of just, we're going to be, this could get really, like, legalistic and offensive if that's how you roll. Like, if you live in a world where you just want to be upset about everything, then this could upset you. But hear me out. So the big, kind of one of the big conversations that's going on in church today is like, well, oh man, you know, should we drink? Should we not drink? And you've got, it's really divisive, right? It's like either you are old school and alcohol is the devil with horns and a pitchfork and the whole thing, right? Or you're on the other end, it's like freedom, grace, liberty, wine overflowing, right? And there doesn't seem to be any middle ground. But this is my thought. I cannot biblically tell you that it says black and white, don't drink, right? I can tell you biblically that it says don't get drunk. I can definitely tell you that. And that's where it gets so dicey, is because what's drunk, right? Like, where do you cross the line? But so here's my concern for us. What about the people who are struggling, right? One in seven people have an alcoholic tendency. One in seven people. So this is what we do as Christians. Like, you take a picture of your meal at dinner, but your craft beer has to be turned, like, pictured right in there with your drink. Just take a picture of your food, right? Or just take a picture of yourself, because we've got enough of those. But you don't have to flaunt your responsibility, right? Because you don't know what you're doing when you're putting that stuff out there. You don't know what you're doing to your brothers and your sisters, right? People who may struggle with that stuff. So honor those who are around you. Honor those who are beneath you by not flaunting your responsibility. You could say that, right? Whatever it is, you could say it, you could. Paul says this, I love this. It's so good and it's so true. He says that all things are lawful, but not everything is profitable. Right? I could do whatever I wanted to do. I could say whatever I wanted to say. I could go wherever I wanted to go, and I can act however I want to act. That's lawful for me, but it's not profitable for the people who are around me, right? And that's what honor does. It's considerate of those who are around us, the struggles that they have. It's just simply valuing them enough that we consider maybe the bondage that they've experienced in their life, or the struggles that they experience in their life, and we don't allow our freedom to trip them up or entangle them deeper in sin. All means all, and that's all that all means. So here's what we got to do. First one is this. Honor always builds up. Honor always builds up. It's so easy to be sarcastic. It's so easy to be cynical. It's so easy to be condescending. It's so easy to be a smart-aleck little punk jerk, right? My struggle, not yours. It's easy for us to have surface-level conversations that don't amount to anything in the grand scheme of things, but honor always builds up. Honor's always looking to make people better, maybe even better that they didn't even know they were better, right? Honor's looking for ways to help people get to the potential that they have. So that's what we need to do when we leave this place, is build people up, because that's honor. Honor gives up preferences to progress. Honor gives up preferences. Yeah, maybe you prefer that. Maybe you like that. Maybe you want to do that. Maybe you want to flaunt your freedom a little bit. But what about the progress of other people? It's difficult, but it's extremely important to remember that honor, it's one of those things that we would be willing to do for somebody else in order them to help them get to where it is that they need to go. We'd be willing to give up some of our preferences to see them make progress. The last one is this. Honor is sacrificial. It's sacrificial. Let's be just upfront, clear, 100% honest. Honor's tough, man. Honor is difficult. Why do you think they chose the expression death before dishonor? Death before dishonor, right? Like, you were going to die maybe in honor. Hello, it's hard. It's not an easy thing. In fact, it's incredibly difficult at times. Honor lifts others up and brings glory to God. And in doing that, you may suffer like this temporary setback, or you may go through a little bit of suffering, but it is small potatoes in the grand scheme of things. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 20. This is our last verse. Everybody's getting fidgety, so I'm going to wrap this thing up. The plane is, landing, right? 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 20 says, "What credit is there if, when you sin and are harshly treated, you endure it with patience?" Right? You deserved it, right? How many times do we tell people this? We tell our kids this, like, you got natural consequences. You got what was coming, right? But then the second part of that verse, it says this, "But if when you do what is right and you suffer for it and you patiently endure it, this finds favor with God." Right? So if you're taking time to honor people and you experience some suffering, you're finding favor with God. And if you take time to show people respect, even if maybe they aren't respectful to you, and you take time to add value to their life, even though maybe they treated you wrong or they said this or they did this, right? If we take time to honor people and we experience a little suffering, then we're still finding favor with God. Now, let me ask you a question. What is better? What's better? You know, a little avoidance of suffering or the favor of God? A little bit of, you know, let me kind of go through my life and do what I want to do and experience my pleasure or the favor of God. And I think I want to live on the favor side of this equation. I want to, even if it means a little bit of personal setback or a personal sacrifice, I'd much rather live a life that finds favor with God. And one of the ways that we do that is honoring people. So honor up, honor down, honor all. Everybody stand up on your feet. Here we go. We're going to do this together. We're going to have some fun up in church. Here we go. Honor up. Wait, we got to say it with me. All right, we'll go. On three, on three. One, two, three. Honor up. Honor down. Honor all the way around. All right, let me pray for you. Stay standing. Father, we love you. Thank you so much for this day. Thank you for this incredible church. Thank you for the privilege of coming each week and learning about you, learning how, God, we've got this plan that you've crafted for us since the beginning of time, this thing that you want us to do with our lives. Help us to do that. God, help us to see the people that you've placed in our life, the value that you've placed on them, and to honor people. God, like you honored us in giving your life for us, help us to honor those that are around us. Help us to honor up, help us to honor down, and help us to honor all the way around.